Business Class is brought to you by the Tourism Academy, harnessing the power of science, business psychology, and adult education to advance the tourism industry and build sustainable economies. Learn how to engage your community, win over stakeholders, and get more visitors at tourismacademy.org.
Steve Ekstrom here, host of the Business Class podcast from the Tourism Academy, tourismacademy.org. Today's guest, one of our advisors and somebody I've come to know as a friend, Dr. Eric Kenny. Dr. Kenny, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here and looking forward to doing this. And it's also it's a pleasure and an honor to be on the advisor board. So thank you.
So what caught your interest about joining our advisory panel?
It was an intersection of several pieces of my life going way back. I come from a family of educators, and while I didn't know that education was going to be my trajectory, it was. While I have jobs that link to higher ed, I'm a faculty member part-time, and I teach doctoral students. And I teach leaders. And so there was this interest of what could I contribute to the Tourism Academy from that perspective. I grew up traveling the world, thanks to my parents, literally from the age of two. And given my work and focus on international education, the importance that people are experiencing others and the importance of other people, locations, and then also the importance of the infrastructure that supports that. I mean, if we look back at COVID, that infrastructure, like many things, shut down. And it's reopening, and that's great, but just how does any vertical continue to get better? So
when you think about teaching doctoral students and teaching leaders, you know, what are a couple things that they all have in common when they start learning about leadership? And how does that maybe change over the course of their learning?
I think there's several things, and I want to be careful not to make too broad of statements.
We can stereotype them.
No, I cannot. Don't get me in trouble. I think one of the things is that the programs that I'm associated with have three pillars. And one of those pillars is self-reflection and the importance of leaders to self-reflect. And I think that leads into the next, which is leadership, along with, you know, implementing change and other components. There are certificates out there. I want to be clear, there are, but they teach to a particular method, model, mode, and those don't always work. And, you know, sometimes I think my students get frustrated. I'm not a fan of the phrase best practices. And I say that because best practices for one organization could actually be incredibly detrimental to another. And so for me, leadership is about teaching different ways of thinking, different models, so that you actually have a tool belt to bring in and apply in your own situation, in your own organization. And like the Tourism Academy, once you start bringing in different nations, the need for different tool belts, or different tool belts, different models, becomes even more important, right? You just use the word stereotype. What is a stereotype in the United States versus a stereotype in another country can be incredibly different. Is there even the language and the definition for what a stereotype is? And so I think that for me is why the work that is Tourism Academy is doing is so important. We're talking, you know, millions, tens of millions of people, and how do you service them? How do you become a better leader at the same time for people that don't think or operate the way you do? Does that answer the question, Stephen?
I think it does. I think it does. And you know, there's a really simple example that I use in just identifying differences. And in the Middle East, persons with wheelchairs or with unique needs are referred to as people of determination.
I love that.
Which is, you know, it's an eye-opening perspective, or just a shift, if you will, compared to calling them people who are disabled, or worse, disabled people.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, and I was just going to say, you know, I was teaching, I had a class and was working, we were looking at a model of cultural development. And one of the things we were talking about is how that's not static, right? So even that phrase that you just used wasn't used a decade ago. And we're constantly learning and bringing in different, you know, the great focus that we have on cognitive diversity right now. 10 years ago, we may not have been having the conversations. And so I think it's the importance of looking at, and is with the leader, there's what are my opportunities, and really thinking about that. They may appear as challenges, but what are my opportunities and determination to get there?
What is your earliest travel memory?
My earliest travel memory, and my parents have validated this, just we were outside of Tehran. I was probably 3 years old, and I had a bowl. And when I say a bowl, I mean a bowl that I was like a foot wide, foot and a half wide, filled with fresh cherries. And I sat there eating cherry after cherry and spitting them out. And we were at a friend's house in Tehran. I also have memories of being at the ski slopes in Iran, and at the bottom of the ski slopes were unfolded Persian rugs with coffee and dates and tea for the families when they were done skiing. And those are my earliest memories. It's interesting, there's a picture right here on my desk of my dad and myself in Lebanon. I don't remember that moment, but that put me on this trajectory of the importance of travel. I'll stop. I'm not quite sure what your next question is, but those are my first memories.
So you mentioned your dad. How are you most like your dad?
I'm like 50% of each, I think. Like my dad, I'm more of an introvert. I'm more quiet. I am more looking at, I think a lot, even though I may not tell you what's on my mind. And I have a pretty low tolerance for, I'm trying not to get too political. I have a pretty low tolerance for not thinking about the other, not thinking about the world that we're in and taking care of it. My parents were hippies. Maybe that will help. And to this day, they both still are. They go to marches. They will call senators' offices every week. My dad hasn't done it for a while, but used to write letters to the editor. Letters to the editor around things like school shootings and the environment, that were pretty blunt. And so I think that's a dry sense of humor.
And your mom? No, you said you're about 50% each, yeah. So.
Same thing. In some ways, the same. My mother was an ESL teacher for my entire childhood and beyond. And so I think more from my mother was that notion of welcome the world in and get to the world. With my mother, I think there was a slight difference. When I grew up, we really did not have money. We didn't. And from my mother, I learned that experiences can be more important than things. And by that, we traveled. Like, all of my Christmases, and this may sound really bizarre, all of my Christmases were spent on beaches in the United States or other countries when I was little. Let's go, let's travel. And there's a slight, what else? So there's that, and different sense of humor from my mom as well, I think, but still dry. From both of them, and I think it's also the family, find the facts, find the information, and I think, and sometimes that means being open and having your ways of thought challenged, especially when you're in other countries. Don't judge right away.
Where is there a destination on your bucket list that you haven't visited yet?
Egypt.
If so, where?
My mother and I have a competition. That sounds awful. but my mother made it to Egypt before I did. I want to go to Egypt. I have not been. I've been quite a few other places in the MENA region, both in Africa as well as the Middle East. But I want to be. I want to see the pyramids. I want to see Luxor. So that's my bucket list. That and a safari. And we were actually talking about doing a safari, and COVID happened. So we actually just started talking about it again.
What do you think that experience would be like?
This may sound odd. I hope it would be majestic. And I say that because when you walk through ruins that are thousands of years old and made, and they have survived, it's mind-blowing. and the scale, I think, and so, and maybe this is too, like, I don't do a lot of big tour groups. I go on my own and I take my own time, and I learned that from my parents. And so some of that is just letting it soak in and that's hard. It's hard. I view it as a very quiet moment or series of moments, which may be very misleading, but and maybe that's why I use majestic. I'm lucky in that I was able to visit Petra when it still existed with my mom, and actually spent New Year's Eve in Petra and then New Year's morning watching the sun come up over Petra. And it was that majestic. This is mind-blowingly thousands of years old. And it's at that point, it was still here. And it's just amazing to sit there, and helps you put your life in perspective. We are small moments in time.
This is true. And I think, you know, I like what you said about taking a moment to be silent and to enjoy that when you're traveling. You know, I went whale watching on Tuesday.
Oh, cool.
It was incredible. And of course, like, I had my phone out like anybody under 70 would. And you know, I definitely wanted to get some pictures of the whales. And at some point I just put my phone away to just sit there and experience that moment. You know,
and I think, you know, as you said too, and some artists are saying this too, like, please stop the phones, just be here in the moment and listen and watch. And it, when I used to work with students and study abroad, one of the things we would say too is, you know, in Florence or in Spain, just go sit in the plaza and listen. Don't make noise. And see who's talking. See what noise comes up. Because it's very different than walking the streets in the United States. Mm-hmm. And that silence can help you see, help things come in. You know, embrace the moment. You know? It's like when a plane takes off. That's so exciting. Like, just be in that moment. And because you're off on an adventure. And don't be watching that. For me, like, don't watch a movie. Like, we're going up to 160, 180 miles an hour in 30 seconds. Enjoy it. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I think that back to leaders, at a certain point, it's important to also be silent. Let the things come in. If you're always talking, others' voices aren't necessarily heard. And so, yeah.
So one of the projects we're working on is a leadership accelerator program to be offered to tourism professionals and those who want to advance their careers or want to cultivate leaders within their organizations. What do you hope participants in that program walk away with?
I think some of it goes back to, well, so there's a hard skill in my mind and a soft skill, right? But what we talked about too, I don't know that reflection is always included when people say soft skill. And so I think for some of that is also highlighting a little bit of that reflection. Am I in reaction to people? How am I doing? You know, but I also think that some of it is hard skill, right? Looking at things analytically, being very, we have a lot of research on what it means to be a leader and how to lead. And so some of those concrete skills backed, but also there's not one way to be a leader. But being aware of one's skills as a leader can really help the organization. And so I think in my mind, it's looking at what are hard skills? And what are some of the, you know, emotional intelligence, other soft skills that we think about? But I also think about that in relation to being a leader today, because being a leader today is very different than being a leader 4 years ago. We cannot discount remote, hybrid, the challenges. How do we even know that people are well at work when they're all scattered around airports or locations around the world and are coming in? And I'm not saying that people should go to the office. It's just a different modality. And so leaders need to really be thinking about resources, people. And so that's my hope.
Do you think that, or what uniquenesses would you see leaders in the tourism sector having that may or may not be so prevalent in other areas, or is it completely transferable?
I think some of it's transferable, but in my mind, the scale is very different. A couple things stand out. There's certain fields, verticals that I would say are highly permeable, meaning the outside influences seep in all the time. And how do you try to control or limit that? But you can't necessarily stop it. Tourism is that way, right? Storms. I mean, just like hurricanes, right? There's very concrete things that are happening. I don't mean to focus on the negative, because you also have new facilities, other, you know, improvements happening. Not every vertical are you always responding to that external environment. It's just the case, right? It could be we're thinking about things. And so years down the road, I think that it's also perceptible to, it's so broad that you're trying to account for many different customers or clients' perceptions of tourism, right? Where do they want to go? What do they want to do? And so how to even think about the industry and your piece of it moving forward. And then I think back to what we talked about. It's everybody and anybody from all over the world, hopefully. So very wealthy people that have saved all their money for this first flight. And they could be from anywhere. Mm-hmm. And that provides challenges, I think. Is that concrete enough, Stephen? I feel like I'm being very abstract this morning.
No, I think you're spot on in that the tourism industry faces some pretty unique challenges, both internally and externally. You know, internally, it has a lot of different stakeholder groups.
Yes.
You know, you have visitors from this country, that country, domestically, people who travel in all different ways, people who travel for all different purposes. And then you have your internal stakeholders, you know, who are members of your community and your business community and your civic leaders and whatnot. And not a lot of industries have that breadth of influence or are subjected to that breadth of influence.
Subjected and also potentially the opportunity. I mean, it's mm-hmm. both. I mean, if you think just about a hotel company or an air, the sheer volume of the footprint, even just in the United States,
mm-hmm.
it puts it up there with some of the largest companies that we would think about where we go shopping, right? Airports. And the complexity, back to those internal stakeholders, that sheer complexity of how am I a leader in, I live outside of Phoenix, how am I a leader in Phoenix for a company, but then
hold on. Sure. That's my dog, Rudy. He's going to be quiet in just a second. Some folks walk by, but that's a lovely part of the podcast experience.
There we go. Yeah. Hopefully you may hear my husky howl. We'll see. He's been quiet. And so I think there's this, and that goes back to that leader, right? A leader is not always in the C-suite. A leader is someone who is helping a group of people improve. Broad statement, right? And that exists throughout in so many ways in the tourism industry.
You mentioned too some of the influences on tourism and travel that folks who are in the industry don't necessarily have control over. You know, external influences like weather or climate or perceptions of safety or interest or whatnot. Do you think leaders have a responsibility to speak out when they have the chance?
If I go to a pure definition of leadership, yes. And the reason I said that, but I also hesitated, is on one hand, that's what it means to be a leader. Right? Take a stand. The flip side is a leader is also responsible, potentially, if we're talking senior leaders, for the well-being of tens of thousands of people. And sometimes a statement can jeopardize that. And so I'm hesitant to give a definitive. In my uh-huh. heart, I would like to say, yes, be out there making statements. The city is safe. Or, you know, contradicting some of the narratives that happen that mm-hmm. aren't necessarily factual. But I also understand if that statement jeopardizes so many people, I have to reconcile that as a leader. And that can be hard.
What would you like to ask me?
What excites you about the next, where the Tourism Academy is and where it'll go in the next year? You have much more, you have a broader perspective than I do on time.
I do. And, okay. Where I see it going, you know, the vision has always been for it to be a place where knowledge is shared. Where best, well, not best practices, but the best quality of education, both effectively and efficiently, can rise to the top. That's something that really excites me. You know, years ago when I was in the trenches in tourism, most of the education and training sucked, and it sucked because people didn't know how to educate. People who had something to sell were masking themselves as educators. Anecdotes were being mistaken for training. And, you know, I think that there's a tremendous opportunity to rise above that. I think there's an opportunity for knowledge to be shared. You know, every organization functioned in its own silo. And I think because of that, there was tremendous lost opportunities. You know, there's no reason why the training from the student travel organization shouldn't be made available to the people who are in the destination organization, or the training from the bus association shouldn't be available to the folks from the international, you know, groups, because I think it just elevates the industry as a whole. You know, it's that focus on the pie and not the individual slice. And that's something that really inspires me and interests me, because I see how what we are doing is making a difference, and I see how others are coming to us because they recognize that we're, you know, for lack of a better term, we're onto something, and to be able to deliver on that and to deliver well on that, you know, to create something that my team can be proud of, and to have a team that is excited to come to work every day, you know, to be the type of organization that people want to work with and want to work for. You know, those are things that keep me going.
Listening to you talk, you described a culture of learning, which is very different than learning and development. And I think cultures of learning are what, when we actually generate knowledge, as you said, and share it, rather than are taught something and apply it. And excited to be here.
Yeah, you know, there are a couple things that come to mind when you say that. One is that it's one of my favorite quotes, and it's, when one person teaches, two people learn. And we are a team of nerds. You know, we are all lifelong learners. You know, and the second is a practical example that I give people. When we create courses, we don't use quizzes and assessments to test what you remember from the last lesson. We instead use them as teaching opportunities, as exercises. So there's your dog. See, there's I'm not the dog. Only one. Yeah. So
he was.
So, you know, I use the example, you know, I can tell you who stood on the blade of grass in 1862 and then ask you who stood on the grass in 1862. Or I can ask you which of these characters prominent in our city's history was around in the 1860s and let you figure it out. You know, I want to teach you how to be a lifelong learner, not force you to remember something.
I would agree. And knowing the concepts, who was around, what was being thought of in 1860, and how, if at all, does that translate into today? Uh-huh. That's different.
I can tell you what events are happening in the city throughout the year. I think you'll be much better served, and the visitor will be much better served, if you know how to see what events are happening today when somebody's at your front desk.
Would agree. Yeah. And awareness that those individuals coming to the front desk could have very different things they want to look at on that list, and may not even be able to read the list in the language that you printed it. Uh-huh. It's we need, it's why I did study abroad for so long. We're much more similar than we are different if we just actually stop and listen. And so, yeah, look forward to seeing where this goes. I'm excited.
So am I. Well, thank you for joining me today. Is there anything I didn't ask that you wish I did?
No, we're good. I love doing this because I never know where it's going to go. So this was an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
That is my entire life. I have no idea where I'm going to be later tonight. I have an idea that there's a beach about 2 hours away, but I also know it's about an hour and a half of driving on a dirt road to get there. So if my tires hold up, I'll be on a beach tonight.
Well, if you are on a beach tonight, enjoy it for me. It's the one of the few things that Phoenix doesn't have that I wish we did. So
you have all the sand, just the lack of water.
We have lots of sand. It just doesn't have waves crashing on it. So it makes a big
difference. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Okay.